Because we are in a battle. We are in a battle against evil. And sometimes we get so comfortable in this world that we forget that. We forget that we're in a struggle. We get complacent. We get at ease. And there is a victory to be won, and it's not for us, for each one of us. It's not going to be won unless we engage in the fight. Unless we employ the weapons that God has placed at our disposal and put our trust in Jesus, our captain. It is in Him that we conquer, but we must participate. We must fight with our master against the evil in this world, in our own lives, and to whatever extent that we can, we must fight the evil around us, the evil that gets done in this world. That it's not a lot that we can do in many circumstances, but the little that we can, we must stand up. At least say what is right, say what is true, represent it, fight for it. But how do you know what's right and what's wrong? How do you know that? I'll talk about that for a few moments. Day, knowing right from wrong. I've talked about this before. But you know, it's something that keeps coming up in this old world. People, especially of this generation, are more and more confused about what's right and what's wrong. And a lot of what they're fighting for is wrong. And a lot of what they're fighting against is right. But how do you know? How do you know you're on the right side? How do you know that you're doing the right thing in your own choices, even in your own life, in your own family, in the way that you deal with your friends and your neighbors, your fellow workers? How do you know that you're doing the right thing? It's an important question. When I was a child, one day, I found a dollar bill in my sister's drawer. And I thought that was just my good fortune. And I went down to the store and bought a candy bar. Coming back home, I met a little girl. She's a pretty little girl. I gave her the rest. I gave her the change. So I was a generous thief. When it was discovered what had happened, my sister was of the opinion that I had done wrong. My mother agreed with her. And she taught me that you don't just take other people's things. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that you weren't supposed to just take other people's things. I was really small. I had no business being going down to the store and buying stuff, but I was always ambitious in my mischief. Somebody had to explain to me what was wrong, because I didn't know. There was a lot of things like that were explained to me through the years. And eventually I got to know basically what was right and what is wrong, but I still had to have it explained to me. Again and again, because even though you know what's right and what's wrong, a lot of times you still don't do the right thing. And so you have to have it explained to you again and again. I encounter this. People tell me this, that they have acquaintances, friends, neighbors, family members who say that they don't want to take their child to any particular church because they want their child to grow up and decide for themselves. Decide for themselves whether they want to be religious or not. Well, we don't do that for school. We don't do that for health care. We don't do that when it comes to deciding whether or not they're going to work, do we? You're going to go to school. You're going to take this medicine. You're going to work. Because it's right. And even though you don't know that right now, you need to know it. And I'm going to teach it to you. You know something else that's right? It's learning what's right and what's wrong. You've got to teach that to a child because he don't know. He does not know right from wrong. And if you don't teach it to him, he's not going to know. Now, we all have an inkling that there's right and wrong. You know, we all kind of innately, just consciously know that certain things are right and certain things are wrong. Certain things get done by people around us and to us, and we say, that's wrong. Or certain things that get done, and we say, well, that's right. That seems right to me. And so we have an awareness of right and wrong. But it gets a little fuzzy. We have to struggle with it sometimes. How do we know? How do we know that our moral judgments are right? Because we got to make them. Every day you make moral judgments. Every day. You can't avoid it. You can't say, well, I'm just not going to make any moral judgments. No, that's crazy. Every behavior that you engage in is either a right or wrong behavior. A lot of it is, I guess, gray or neutral, or, you know, you can have vanilla or you can have chocolate. There's nothing moral about that. But whether you pay the guy for the chocolate or not, that's a moral decision. Yeah. Whether you stick a gun in his face and take what's in the till, that's a moral decision. Say, well, I would never do that. Well, that's a moral decision. That's a choice that you've made. Some people don't make that choice. They make the opposite choice. But who's to say whether it's right or wrong? Yeah? Say, well, I know stealing is wrong. I know that that's wrong. Why? And is it so wrong that you won't fudge that rule on occasion? Maybe take a little bit here and a little bit there that maybe you technically, really, you're not supposed to have coming to you. How do you know that your moral choices are right or wrong? What's your standard? What are you going to base that on? And these are kind of things that people just do without thinking about it. And let me tell you something. When you do stuff without thinking about it, you usually don't do them very well. You got to think things through. You got to have some kind of conception of why you make the choices that you do and what that is based on. Otherwise, you're probably not making moral choices at all. How do we know? How do we know what's right from wrong? Well, the most common answer to that question is well, it's just my opinion. It's my life. And I have to decide what's right and what's wrong. And so I just think this thing through and I come up with a decision. I come up with an opinion. And my opinion's just as good as your opinion. And so it's my life. So I'm going to live my life according to what I think is right or what's wrong. So I'm just going to do what seems right to me. And if it seems wrong, I'm not going to do that. And I'll just keep a clear conscience. I guess a lot of people, if you ask them, how do you decide what's right and what's wrong? Well, I do what seems right. I don't do what seems wrong, and that works for me. Well, there's a few problems with that. If you want to think about it, if you want to be objective, step back away from yourself and look at what it is that you're saying when you say that. Jeremiah, the prophet, puts it this way in Jeremiah 10:23. I know, O Lord, that a man's way is not in himself, nor is it in a man who walks to direct his steps. Now, technically, that statement in that passage is really about Israel and about its behavior toward God. But it works in a general way, too, to understand that we have limitations. that we can't just figure things out. And that's because we are limited. We're limited in our intelligence. We're limited in our time. We're limited in our moral insight. We're limited. Now, we all know that about other people. All you have to do is go walking around Walmart and say, these people are limited. This guy got up, and that's the way he decided to dress today. And I think he's probably mistaken about that. You know, people are limited. Well, you're limited too. We're all limited. And you're not an exception. And if you look at the lives of other people, and they're doing what they think is right, they're doing what seems right to them, and you think, well, you shake your head, those people are crazy. Why do they think that's right? Well, why do you think what you're doing is right? They're doing what seems right to them. Why do you think just because it's you that you do what seems right to you, that you're any more right than that other guy? Because chances are, you, given your limitations, that those choices are not always right. Psalm 53, 1 through 2. Think about this description. And so, you know, here Jeremiah says, I know, O Lord. See, here's the thing. We need to know. We need to know this about ourselves. And Psalm 53 describes us, you and me. They are corrupt, and their ways are vile. There is no one who does good. God looks down from heaven on all mankind to see if there is any who understand, any who seek God. Everyone has turned away. All have become corrupt. There is no one who does good, not even one. Now, that's a broad general statement. And of course, it's taken as a whole because of my limitations, because of my imperfections, because of my failings. I don't measure up. I don't measure up to God in His opinion, in His view. When He sees what I do on my own, of my own accord, He sees that and He says, that's no good. That's not good. And that's a reality that we need to accept, that we need to face up to and say, on my own, of my own accord, when it all gets weighed out, I'm no good. Now, our sense of goodness is always relative. I'm no good, but I'm not as bad as that other guy. That other guy who robs and kills and maims and, well, I'm better than him, and so I'm good. But that doesn't make you good because you're not exceptionally bad. It just makes you less bad, but not good. Can I not do good things? Yeah, you can do good things. What, how? By accident? On purpose? How do I know what I'm doing is good? Because on my own, of my own accord, I'm not. See, the problem is we're selfish. And all of our view of things is colored by and filtered by what I want. And you know this is to be the case. You know, everybody sees things through the lens of what it is that suits them, what they want. We all do that. And everything gets twisted because of that. It's what I want. And we don't even see it. We don't even see that our behavior is being affected by our selfishness. James 3 and verse 16 puts it this way, "For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice." And it is so obvious to me when I look at the world around me why people make the decisions they do about what's moral and what's not moral. So very often it comes down to it's what they want. It's what they desire. And that's the problem. We say, well, it seems right to me. Well, your ability to perceive what seems right is highly affected by what seems good or desirable to you. And that's why people do the things that they do and excuse it and rationalize it. But for those who are self-seeking and who reject the truth and follow wickedness, there will be wrath and anger. You see, why do people do things that are wicked? Because they are self-seeking. And we all are. But that is what has to be fought. That's the problem. We have to acknowledge and recognize that there is in us selfishness and self-seeking and desires. And that's part of us. And that skews our ability to perceive right and wrong correctly. I mean, it's there. We know that there's right and wrong. And we see it especially when people do things wrong against us. But our selfishness hurts our ability to see the wrong when we're doing it to someone else, because it suits us. That's the problem. That's the problem with deciding what's right and what's wrong based solely on what seems right to you. And we do rationalize. We rationalize our actions. We say, well, this isn't so bad in this case because of X, Y, or Z. And we get really good at coming up with those rationalizations. I mean, little bitty children, when you start to tell them not to do something, from the moment they can start to talk, start explaining or arguing or excusing what they've done, we get really good at it. And it's a lifelong process. 1 Samuel 13 and verse 12. This is an excellent example of this kind of thing. Saul was supposed to wait for Samuel to come to offer sacrifices before they went to battle. But Samuel delayed. And Samuel didn't get there in time, or in Saul's opinion, in enough time. And so Saul took it upon himself to do something he knew was wrong. The offering of the sacrifices himself. Saul was no priest. He couldn't do that. But here's what he says. He says, I thought, and that's the beginning of the problem right there. I thought, now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the Lord's favor. So I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering. And we do this. We do this our whole lives. Well, I had to. I was forced to. I was compelled to. I had no choice. Whenever someone says, I had no choice, they're talking about a choice they made. It was a choice. Now, they felt constrained in making that choice. They felt like the alternative to the choice they made was undesirable. I understand that. Everybody understands that. The alternative was bad. But it was still a choice. In this case, Saul could have continued to wait. Now, he thought that if he continued to wait, that maybe the Philistines would attack, and maybe because he hadn't offered sacrifices that they would lose the battle, and that was undesirable, but he feared losing his kingdom, so he made a choice that he felt compelled to make, with the result that he lost his kingdom. He made the wrong choice. He made a wrong choice that he thought he was compelled to make, and that's the problem. That's the problem with us deciding what's right and what's wrong, is that we rationalize. We excuse. We think, I had to do this. So very often, we're mistaken about that. Proverbs 30 and verse 20. This is the way of an adulterous woman. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I've done nothing wrong. Now, how can she say that? Well, I don't know. I'm sure she's got a handy bag full of excuses, of reasons why her behavior is acceptable. And we see it every day. We see people do things and then try to, and they're clearly wrong. They're obviously wrong. But they still argue. They still make excuses. They still say, but because of what this person did, or because I needed this, or because. But we're not any different in that regard. We all are prone to do exactly the same thing. And so, if we had to rely solely upon our own recognizance to decide what was right and what was wrong, this failing, which is glaring in the case of this adulterous woman, it would still apply to us in many ways. I've done no wrong. I haven't done anything wrong. You know, it's like the kid with the chocolate all over his mouth, you know. Who, me? 1 John 1 and verse 8, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. And that's often the case. We say, I haven't done anything wrong. Well, I think you're mistaken about that in many ways. I know that I've done wrong. I know it. So we have to have some help. Some help. Well, another part of the problem is we're short-sighted. Because we start to think, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to figure out like chess moves. I'm going to do 3 or 4 chess moves ahead here in this decision I've got to make. And I'm going to plot out all the possible outcomes and consequences of this choice. And I'm going to make an intelligent, well thought out, this is better than just doing whatever seems right, but you know, I'm going to look at the consequences of my choices. And I'm going to come up with a list of positives and negatives, and I'm going to think this thing through, and I'm going to use all of the intelligence and all of the careful planning and plotting that I can, and on that basis, knowing the outcome of the decisions that I make, then I will know what is the right decision. I can't even match my socks. I can't even, you know, I can't tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. Can you say what's going to happen tomorrow? Proverbs 14, verse 12, there is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. The way of death. You see what that's saying? Here's a guy thinking, okay, that's where I want to go, and I'm going to make the choices in my life that are going to get me there. I don't want to go over there. I want to go there. And he marches to death. He's marching to death. He can't see it. He doesn't know it. But that's where he's going. That's the problem. Short-sighted. We're so dim. We're so limited in our ability to see those consequences. It's scary, really. And of course, in the end, we can't agree. If it's just your say-so against mine, how is that ever going to come? How are we ever going to come to some kind of common understanding? Because we got to live together. I got to live with you. You got to live with me. If you're just doing what you think is right, and I'm doing what I think is right, then it leads to what is described in the book of Judges. In those days, Judges 17:6, in those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And if you've ever read the book of Judges, you know what the outcome of that was. It was murder and mayhem and rape and pillaging. Everybody doing what seems right in their own eyes is a recipe for disaster. And you know why our society is becoming more and more chaotic? Breaking down social structure, civil cooperation. Because everybody's doing what seems right. And in the process of everybody doing what seems right, they're doing a lot of wrong. And that is a process that's going to continue to degrade in our society because we've lost our connection with the true way of determining what's right and what's wrong. What about social convention? Why don't we just need to talk some more? We just need to get together, have a good conversation, debate this thing, and have everybody participate in this group-wide symposium. And we're all going to get together and we're going to talk this thing through and we're going to apply our best minds and we're going to work this thing out and we're going to decide what's right and what's wrong. That's a lot of what happens, of course. We're going to get on the internet and we're just going to have a big old chat room. We're going to talk this thing through. Reach a consensus, take a vote, pass a law, impose the collective will, follow the crowd. That's what we're going to do. That's what we are doing. How's that working out? Our political leaders, they can't agree on anything. They can't agree on things that are so obviously needing to be agreed upon. They can't do it. How are they going to decide what's moral and what's immoral? But that's what we've got. That's what we got in the world. We've got people who are saying, well, the majority thinks it's this way, and so that's the way it must be, right? Well, the problem is the collective will is no better than the individual in determining what's right and what is wrong. Instead of one numbskull, you've got a room full of numbskulls. Instead of one person thinking and acting selfishly and rationalizing their decisions, you've got a whole bunch of people doing that. And multiplying error does not create a correct answer. And that's what we have. We have people, you know, is two heads are better than one. That may be true, trying to figure things out. But when it comes to the ultimate questions of what is right and what is wrong, two or three or four or a million or a billion doesn't necessarily get you to the right answer. And we all know this is true because there are whole civilizations and whole societies and whole periods of human history in which everybody was wrong. And we know that's the case. At least we think that's the case. You know, that's if that's your opinion about those people, why do you think it would be right about you? Romans 3 and verse 4. Paul corrects a common misperception. He says, may it never be. Rather, let God be found true, though every man be found a liar, as it is written, that you may be justified in your words and prevail when you are judged. You know, if every single person on this planet said that murder was okay, every single person, it still wouldn't be okay. If every person on this planet said that stealing was okay, it wouldn't be okay. Now you know that, right? So if that's true in the extremists, in the most absurd extreme, everybody, every single person, then why do you assume that some majority of persons in one particular society or one particular country is going to be able to figure out what's right and wrong, or can put the imprimatur of right and wrong upon something? You can't. It won't. And might doesn't make right. You can't impose that. You can't say, okay, we've taken a vote and it passed by one out of a billion, and so now we're going to take the power of society and we're going to impose this moral judgment on everybody. Does that make it right? No. The kings of the earth, Psalm 2 and verse 2, the kings of the earth take their stand, the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed, saying, let us tear their fetters apart and cast away their cords from us. And the next verse says, He who sits in the heavens laughs. Laughs at us. We make these broad determinations. You know, the people in Hollywood, the people who write the movies and make the movies, and they make really powerful, stirring message movies. That doesn't make them right. Just because they're effective propagandists for wrong, it doesn't make them right. Just because everybody thinks this way doesn't make it right. Just because people get up on their high horse or on their moral high ground and say, this is, you know, you're going against the tide of history. Well, who says? Says who? Hitler won with a 41% majority vote. He won. It was a fair election. Now, after that, there weren't any more fair elections. After that, he won by 99.9%. Imagine that. But the first one he won, 41%. That was enough. We've had presidents who've been elected by 41%. And people supported Hitler. They supported him. And people supported Stalin, and they supported Mao. And whole generations of people ran out in the street and ransacked houses and dragged people out and beat them to death. And the people waved their banners. And they said, "This is right! This is right! This is the tide of history. You're fighting against history if you fight against this. This is so right what we're doing." And they murdered and they tortured and they put people into camps. Might doesn't make right. Never has. Never will. Luke 23, passage reminiscent of what Kenny was talking about this morning. Pilate questioned Jesus. He said, "I don't find anything wrong with God. He hasn't broken any laws that I know anything about." But the crowds shouted, the whole crowd shouted, "Away with this man! Release Barabbas to us! Crucify Jesus, release Barabbas." So Pilate, you know, being a pragmatic man, wanting to go along with the majority, go along with the crowd, released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection, Barabbas. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, and the one they asked for, he surrendered Jesus to their will. "Crucify! Crucify!" That's the crowd. That's the majority. Doesn't make it right. And of course, Paul experienced a similar circumstance. The Jews, Acts 17:5, the Jews becoming jealous and taking along some wicked men from the marketplace, formed a mob, set the city in an uproar, and coming upon the house of Jason, they were seeking to bring them out to the people. The voice of the people, vox populi, so very often wrong. There's no guarantee of being right. And the same people who are shouting and castigating us as people of faith, and accusing us of hatred, accusing us of malice, saying, you know, "We know that you are wrong. We know that you are..." They'll be shouting something else down the road. Men have always been shouting stuff because that's what people do. And we must be prepared. We must be prepared to resist the immorality of the crowd. We have to be, because that's the only way to be moral. The only way to be moral is to determine morality based on what the true source of that is. We'll get to it in a moment. Running out of moments, aren't we? Exodus 23:2. "You shall not follow the masses in doing evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after a multitude in order to pervert justice." See, the real source of right and wrong is divine revelation. And I know that's an unpopular idea in the world today, but it's the truth. Divinely revealed standards. Only God has the wisdom and objectivity to know what's right. Only God has the authority to declare it for everybody. And only God has the power to enforce it in the end. We will all answer to Him. And since we answer to Him, and we will answer to Him, and only He has the power and authority and the moral wisdom and judgment to decide what is right and wrong, He's the source of what's right and wrong. He is. He always has been. Psalm 19:7, "The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether." That's what we need to realize. One more passage, Hebrews 5:12. "In fact, though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you the elementary truths of God's Word. All over again, you need milk, not solid food. Anyone who lives on milk, being still an infant, is not acquainted with the teaching about righteousness. But solid food is for the mature who, by constant use, have trained themselves to distinguish good from evil. To know what is right and what is wrong, you must be taught. And you must be taught by the Word of God. Because on your own, you are incapable of knowing those things. That's my lesson. I'll stop there. I'll talk about this some more next week. You know that you've made wrong choices in your life. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. You've made wrong choices. And you know you're guilty. Your own conscience. You've done things that you think are wrong. Whether you pay any attention to God or not, you know you've done things that you think are wrong. So you're guilty. But you know that if you have any faith in God, you know that you violated His will. And you stand condemned, and you will answer to Him for that, but you don't have to if you will accept His mercy and grace in Jesus Christ and accept the instruction of what is good, a good life. The man on the cross is a good man, a man who wants to teach you a good life. Give your life to Him. Let Him teach you and train you what is right and what is wrong. And when you do what is wrong, you will have a source of mercy and forgiveness in Jesus Christ. That's the way to be good, through Him. If you want that for yourself today, say so. Give your life to the Lord. Be baptized in His name. Wash your sins away in Jesus. Come forward and say that you will as we stand and sing.